You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this draft reaction podcast from Locked On Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com. Joining me today to break down the NBA draft lottery, where the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be picking number 8 this year with that Nets pick, it's Trevor Bagnati. You have read his draft writing at the Step Back, and he's going to be doing a lot of draft stuff in the coming months for FearTheSword.com as well. Trevor, welcome back to the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Excited to get into the draft season once again. This is one of my favorite days of the year. And, you know, things didn't work out quite as well for the Cavs as we would want, but still a pretty favorable outcome for the draft lottery, I would say.
It feels right for this team, for everything that they have been through and for where this organization is, that we're back talking about the draft. It's been a while, I think, since we've talked about the draft in a meaningful way with this group. It has really been Jetty Osman is the one rookie that the Cavs have that is of any value, or not. Ante Zizic has promised to, but they've not had someone the caliber to draft someone at this high in the draft in some time. It's really since the Andrew Wiggins pick that they've not been in the lottery, obviously, with LeBron James coming back, trading away future picks. And if LeBron stays, they will lose one of those picks. They will lose their pick to the Hawks in one of the next 2 years, assumedly. So that ends up complicating this. But the Cavs, as I mentioned, are picking it. Here's the draft order for those of you that may have not seen or just want a quick response to it. The Phoenix Suns are at number 1. The Kings are at 2. The Hawks are at 3. The Grizzlies are at 4. The Mavs are at 5. The Magic at 6. Bulls 7. Cavs 8. Knicks 9. Sixers 10, Charlotte Hornets 11, Clippers at 12 and 13 because they have the Pistons pick, and then the Denver Nuggets at 14. That rounds out the lottery this year. Trevor, just real quick before we get into the cap situation, aside from Phoenix, who obviously is at number 1, has that obvious connection with their new coach to Luka Doncic, who to you are the winners of this draft lottery, or what teams to you do you think got a really favorable situation for themselves?
Well, I think that probably the best one other than Phoenix, obviously, is Sacramento. I mean, anytime you move up 5 spots in the lottery rankings, it's a pretty good win for you. And particularly for the way that their team is set up this year, they're pretty well posed to do pretty well with whatever they get out of whoever Phoenix doesn't take between Doncic and probably DeAndre Ayton, who is more than likely going to be the other guy in the top 2. You know, they've got a pretty good core already forming. They've got some nice pieces with De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield. Bogdanovich looks very good. And now having the chance to either add Luka Doncic, who fits very, very well with the rest of the skill sets of all of their wings and backcourt players, or DeAndre Ayton, who can be their rock in the post, and they can create a pretty good offense around with his talents. And David Jaeger's system there, I think that they were a pretty big winner here as well. You know, I also think that pretty big win for Philadelphia, obviously, to be able to get the Lakers pick, not have that jump up and get robbed of that by Boston. That's a pretty big deal for them as well. And really anybody in the top 8 or 9 picks is going to come away with a win here. I think that this class is set up to have players that would normally be top 5, top 6 level picks in your typical draft, all the way down to the back end of the top 10. So where the Cavs are picking, where the Knicks are picking, where the Sixers are picking, that's a pretty good outcome for all those teams, even if they didn't get to jump up. You know, they're still going to get a shot at a very, potentially very valuable player.
I think the interesting team for me, that how they slid back, was Dallas, just because they seemed like a team that would certainly fit taking one of the obvious top guys. Now them at 5, to me, it makes them just kind of a wild card to some degree in this lottery. When you look at the Cavs, though, at 8, they are obviously going to have to wait. They're going to have to let draft respond to them a little bit and see who goes in front of them. They're obviously not likely going to get any of the guys of the Bagley class. They're in sort of the Michael Porter, Trae Young, Mo Bamba, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Wendell Carter class. like Mikal Bridges as well in there as well. Looking at it, you mentioned that this is a draft you think has guys that are good through that ninth pick. Who to you are some of the guys that you think make a lot of sense when you start thinking about, okay, this guy could be a really good pick at number eight?
Well, I think the guy that we're probably going to see very closely tied to the Cavs, because we've already seen some news coming out about him, is Trae Young, the Oklahoma point guard who lit college basketball on fire for the first half of the season. I think that he's probably the best bet if we're looking at guys that they're going to focus in on. He's going to be the guy that they're going to want. There's a decent chance that he's going to be gone and long gone by the time that the Cavs
pick. I just real quick, I subscribe to the idea that Danny Chow of The Ringer has put out there that he's just going to be on the Orlando Magic, and we all just have to accept the fact that Orlando's just going to take Trae Young. He just feels like an Orlando Magic pick, even if they do have a different regime in there. He just feels to me like the quintessential Orlando Magic thing to do.
Yeah, they need a point guard. There's a point guard, regardless of his faults or his strengths. They're going to take a point guard. Would be a pretty good, pretty easy line of thinking. But if he's there, the Cavs are probably going to be focused in on him. They want to try to get a point guard that can take some load off of LeBron. That's a pretty easy one. Michael Porter Jr. also probably another guy that makes a lot of sense for them to focus on, because even with the back injury and him coming back and looking a little rusty, he's a player that was a potential top three pick before his injury at the beginning of the season. And a lot of stuff, you know, would have probably come out in his college basketball season were he to have really played that may have swayed that one way or another. But the fact is he was probably the most highly rated recruit out of this high school class. And now he's probably going to be sitting there at eight. If his medicals check out, he's a guy that helps the Cavs in a variety of ways. He can help take some pressure off of LeBron. He can potentially be the number one guy if LeBron leaves. He can be the guy that they center around and build. He's a primary scorer, potential player. So him potentially growing into maybe the successor for LeBron, whether he stays or not, is something that the Cavs are going to be able to sell fans on, and you know, seems like a pretty smart decision. Mikal Bridges of Villanova, another player that makes a lot of sense. You go get another cheap, cost-controlled wing who looks like he's going to be pretty effective shooting off the catch and also defending multiple positions, two things that the Cavs are always looking for to be able to put around LeBron. He's a safe bet to be around there at eight and would make a lot of sense there as well. So those three players are the three that I would expect the Cavs to probably focus a lot of their time and effort evaluating, and it just depends on what shakes out ahead of them, which of those guys is going to be there.
The one aspect of this draft that I think is particularly interesting is that the Cavs are going to have to make this pick 8 days before LeBron's player option is due. We do not know, based on when their season ends, which we don't know as we record this, when he wants to make his decision. There's this timeline with him that obviously will be the organization's top priority from the day their postseason run ends to the day that he decides, okay, I'm staying or I'm going somewhere else. It's also too early, I would posit, to say that we know what how the league values this pick, what this pick could net the Cavs. Could this net them, if you attach salary to it, you know, could this get you Paul George, who opts in, and is that what you can do there? If he opts in and says, I want to go play with LeBron in Cleveland, you know, is this where it could this get you McCollum or Kemba Walker? Like, it's too early, I think, personally, for us to know exactly what this pick's value is going to be. I expect it to be brought up in trades on draft night. The Cavs are a team that make, to me, if LeBron, they have a vibe that LeBron is going to stay, it makes some sense to me. But considering the Cavs are in a position where they do not know exactly what LeBron James is going to do next season, and he is obviously the center of their world, does the likelihood that they are just not going to know what his season is going to be next season and where he's going to, what team he's going to be on, does that, in your opinion, mean they should look at this pick any differently? Should they like, what do they do if they're in the situation where they do not know he's going to say, what kind of player makes sense in that type of reality? And frankly, like, how much harder does that make that evaluation process when you're trying to pick a player at eight, assuming you're actually keeping that player?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. I think it factors in more to actually keeping the pick than it does to potentially trading it. You know, trading the 8 pick is probably going to be something that is going to net you a pretty valuable piece. I mean, last year we saw the number 7 pick get traded basically with some spare parts for Jimmy Butler. And, you know, I think that we can see maybe something like that happen again, where the Cavs are able to attach that 8th pick with a couple of the young guys, maybe Chetty Osman. Maybe they throw, you know, one of their more favorable contracts in, and they're able to get a guy not on Butler's level, but maybe at the value of like a CJ McCollum. I hate to try to throw names out there because I definitely don't have any sources. And also, you really never know who's going to be actually available come draft night. But that level of player is somebody who's going to help you whether LeBron's there or whether he leaves, because he can either take over the load and he can be your number one guy on a rebuilding team, or he can be a nice complimentary player. And I think that that's valuable, and I think that you can potentially get that value either way. Where it becomes an issue is with who they're going to take. You know, we say Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young are both off the board at number 8. Then the question becomes, do you try to swing for the fences? Do you try to get a guy who's going to give you some value, potential value as as maybe a top 3 piece? You know, a good example there is if Colin Sexton's available, maybe he's your option then, if that's the way that you're leaning. Whereas he probably isn't a good pick if you're convinced that LeBron is staying, and you probably are going to want to gravitate more towards a role player like Mohamed Bamba or Michael Bridges. So I think that that's a really difficult thing that they're going to have to weigh, is if they can't find a deal, what do they want to use that pick on? Because there's once you get past kind of that range with Porter and with Young and with Marvin Bagley, you're starting to get into this clear dichotomy of your boom or bust guys like Sexton or your very clear role players. And that's going to be a dangerous water for them to navigate.
Right now, I'll just pull up the SB Nation NBA mock draft that Ricky O'Donnell did, just to give you an idea of how this could play out. In this scenario, Michael Porter goes 5 to Dallas, Trae Young goes 6 to Orlando, then Mo Bamba goes 7 to Chicago. That puts the Cavs in a position to draft Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Kentucky. He's a 6'6 point guard with a 7-foot wingspan. Still too early to know, but Trevor, but we'll wrap it up on this. When you think about this, when you think about how this is going to be, I mean, do you think this is, all things considered, it's obviously not the level of pick I think the Cavs are hoping to get out of it when they traded it, but considering everything, is this a good value pick? Is this a good thing to just have to what degree, if it is a good thing, how good actually is this pick in this draft? What kind of draft class are the Cavs into as they get this one shot to potentially draft somebody?
Well, like I said earlier, I think that the Cavs are in a position where they are probably drafting a player at 8 that they would normally be able to get probably around 5 or 6 in your typical draft class. This class is more than others that we've seen in the past few years that may have been, you know, not so top heavy, but have a lot of value down the line. You think of 2013 as an example there, or you get a class, or you typically get a class that's going to be a little bit more balanced, like last year's appears to be. This class is going to be 9, 10, 11 guys deep, depending on who you talk to and depending on who's high on guys like Miles Bridges and Colin Sexton and who's not. And then there's a significant drop off after that point. So, like I said earlier, I think the Cavs have lucked in a little bit that this is the draft that they had the 8th pick in, as opposed to a top 3 pick, because unlike a typical draft where you're going to probably see, you know, some of the guys that you might have available, your Miles Bridges types, your Shai Gilgeous-Alexander types, you're going to have the potential to draft like a Mohamed Bamba or a Marvin Bagley or a Trey Young or a Michael Porter Jr. at 8. And those guys in your typical class are not going to be there. So this is a very valuable tool for the Cavs, even if it didn't work out to move up like they had hoped. This is still going to be a very valuable tool for them, either in acquiring a piece from the draft that's going to be helpful, or it helps boost the stock of the pick. Compared to what we've seen in the past, they may be able to get a little bit better player out of it than they would in the typical draft if they were just trading the 8th pick.
This is going to be a fascinating process. I, for one, am very happy to be back talking about the draft. One of the craziest things to get to cover, and to see how the Cavs approach this is going to be a very, very fascinating start to what is going to be a very fascinating summer in Cleveland. But the guest has been Trevor Magnani. You can find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, thanks so much.
Yep, thanks.